This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Talking about chicken a la king, mango and garbanzo tabbouleh, real potatoes and vegetables with roasted garlic and basil, zucchini ziti, granola fruit bar.
Look at all this beautiful food.
Welcome to Green Eggs and Dan, where I interview amazing people with amazing minds, but all I care about is what is in their fridge. My guest today, a hilarious comedian, writer, actor, producer. She's all the hyphens. She's got a bunch of very funny stand-up specials. She's done all the late-night shows. She's written for a bunch of fantastic shows, including Medical Police, People of Earth, Crowded, Surviving Jack, and she was a writer-producer on one of my favorite shows, Barry on HBO. Please welcome Emily Heller.
Hello! Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here. So your Zoom name says Peter Miller, who's your husband.
Yeah.
Your last name is Heller.
Yeah.
I feel like it's just one letter, basically.
You're right. He should change his name.
He should change his name.
We did get a couple presumptuous wedding gifts that were like monogrammed with the letter M as if I was going to change my name, which... was pretty funny considering we very explicitly got married for health insurance.
I mean, I feel like you should have everything monogrammed LLER.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, the lure.
The lures.
The lures. Okay, let us quickly, before we talk about anything else important, get into your fridge.
Yeah.
You guys can see Emily's fridge on my Instagram at StandUpDan.
Oh boy.
Okay. Well, you know, you guys do a lot of takeout, is what I'm seeing here. There's a huge tower of takeout here up top.
Look, that's all from one meal. Let's be clear.
I wasn't judging. I mean, I was, but I wasn't. You could hear it in my tone.
Yeah, that is.
What is this? Where is this from?
That is from Mazal.
Mazal, is that like, Israeli food?
Yeah, it's like a vegetarian Israeli restaurant. I think they're Israeli. It's really good. So, you know, one of those containers is just baba ganoush.
Which is just filler. That doesn't count.
Which I'm like, it's a side.
By the way, in the baba ganoush hummus wars, which is not even a war, it's kind of like Uber versus Lyft, I am still an enormous fan. I think I'm a bigger fan of baba ganoush than I am of hummus.
Oh, big time. Me too. I think it's like the only sort of like the only thing that hummus has going for it is protein, which baba ganoush is, you know, nutritionally pretty insignificant because eggplants are just water.
You can live 2 days on eggplants alone. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it takes your life away a little bit. I think it sucks the nutrients out of you.
But I definitely prefer baba ganoush.
And then on your second row, we have more takeout here.
Okay, yeah, that's a little bit of takeout. I actually can't identify what that first one is. And that rice has got to be very old.
Yeah, yeah.
I never know when
to throw out rice. I think rice just never goes... It's like never goes bad, and then you open it one day and it's like a fucking petri dish.
It just gets dry really fast. That's the thing. And here's another issue with my fridge is I am a composter. So like sometimes if I don't want to throw something out, but I want to like put it in the compost, but I don't want to deal with putting it in the compost, that will keep it in the fridge longer than it should be.
Ah, so some of this is just like a purgatory for the compost.
Yes, it is. It's compost purgatory. So that rice, you know, is I think maybe a couple weeks old, and I need to take it out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Where do you normally get your? Was this Chinese food? I'm judging based on the rice carton. There's a sort of Great Wall of China looking thing on it.
You know, that's actually from Thai food.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
But they don't make Thai food specific rice containers, I think. I think they probably just get the Chinese ones in bulk.
I think that's true. Also, Thai people don't use chopsticks.
Yeah.
Unless they're having Chinese style noodles, they call it.
Right.
Like, which is like noodles in a soup, like a ramen type thing.
Yeah. Or like a lot of Northern Thai cuisine, because it was like on sort of the Silk Road, or like they do more trade with China. A lot of the Northern Thai dishes, they'll give you chopsticks because a lot of those dishes developed as sort of like fusion-y, like khao soi is like a Northern Thai. We went to Thailand, and like when we were in Northern Thailand, a lot of times when you like walk into a store or a restaurant, they say ni hao.
Because get out of here.
If you're just like a foreign visitor, sometimes they would just be like, oh, this is how we greet foreigners here.
That is so funny.
Yeah. And I was like,
I love when a culture is racist against itself. Like,
but it's not like, their own culture. It's
I know, but it's like we have I'm Iranian, and my dad's side of the family is from a town called Esfahan, which is like they're known for being really cheap, shady people. Mm-hmm. And my dad will be like haggling with someone and be like, you know me, I'm Esfahani, it's in my blood. I'm like, don't embrace that, dad.
Jesus.
I went to a Thai restaurant recently, and it was probably last year, and I asked for chopsticks, and I saw her like kind of eye roll, and I was like, do you guys not use chopsticks? She's like, no, we just use it for noodle dishes. And then I looked into it, and it's a pretty bizarre story. Basically, like the king of Thailand in like the late 1800s like went to Europe, and like everyone was using forks and stuff, and he was like, yo, we got to bring these back. And he like made a decree. He's like, we're not using chopsticks anymore. We're just using
So they forks. Did use chopsticks before that. Interesting.
Yeah. And then he wanted to be fancy. And so
the king has a lot of power there.
Yeah. Which is weird, because it doesn't strike you as like a kind of a North Korea-ish type place. Like everyone seems kind of, it doesn't seem like you're in an authoritarian country when you're there.
No.
But then, like, if you, like, slander the king, like, if you tweet against the king, like, you're going to jail for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you can get, it's like a huge sign of disrespect. We went to a couple movies when we were over there, too, and it was, like, before the movies, they play, like, the national anthem, and you have to stand and, like, pay respect to the king. We visited, like, right before the king died.
By the way, if anyone's listening, yes, one of the top three reasons to go to Thailand, one is the nature, two is the food, three is the movie theaters. You want to go to Thailand to watch movies?
Oh, yeah.
I'm joking. You're being serious?
Well, that was, they had 4DX movie theaters before we did, like all over the place.
What are
4DX movies? Are the ones where like your chair moves and they like spray air at you. It's like in conjunction with the movie on screen. We saw the like Point Break reboot there, and it was like so crazy. Like when someone was during one of the fight scenes, the chair like kind of like punches you in the back a little bit, and when they're like surfing or whatever, there's like little like squirts of water. It's very intense. I don't know if I totally recommend it, but we started getting 4DX movie theaters after they did. Like, their movie theaters are actually pretty good.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Well, I owe you an apology, because I was making fun of you and it turned back on me.
Well, I also sprained my ankle like the first day of our trip, so we ended up not doing a ton of like hiking around the palaces and trying to figure out what we could do while sitting down, and we ended up seeing a couple movies there, and they were both really fun to see. The other one we saw was a Thai movie that was an animated movie that was a series of short films all inspired by the king's dog that were commissioned by the government, and it was really fun. The king really, really loved his dog.
It's one of those few times that a lunatic authoritarian actually did something right. It's like, yeah. These need to be seen, King.
And good again, job. I want to be clear. I don't actually know if the king is an authoritarian. I don't want to be on record saying that. I want to go back to Thailand and have a good time.
Okay, you see, the fact that you're scared of saying that out loud tells you all you need to know.
I just haven't looked into it in a while.
Oh, man. It's like when I say it, when we were like protesting against like the stuff happening in Iran, and my mom's like, watch what you say. You're never going to be able to. They're watching. I'm like, Mom, we're in America. They're not.
They're not listening to my podcasts.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Iran. We were listening to Green Eggs and Dan. Big fans. Big fans. However, okay. So on your second row.
Yes.
In the back, you've got your bon maman preserves, which is kind of, this is thematically a part of the issue that I see with your fridge. I feel like there's no rhyme or reason to anything. You've got, you've got your jelly on the second row down, all the way in the back. You've got like omega vitamins for the pet in the front.
Yeah.
You've got yogurt in the back on the second row, but
then
on the
cottage cheese.
That's cottage cheese.
Yeah.
Okay. And then on the third row, you've got sour cream and goat cheese. And like, why?
It's all like based on the size of the things. I probably should move all the dairy to the middle shelf just for more consistency. But a lot of stuff got taken out and then put back in, like in just sort of random order that day. Because I did. Okay. Or like earlier this week. I took this picture yesterday, I guess. And like in the interim, I did some grocery shopping. And I also had someone over and I cooked a bunch. And then that led me to like taking a bunch of stuff out and putting a bunch of stuff back in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll give you a pass. Where does Waterloo, the drink, lie in the... So on the second row, there's three strawberry Waterloos. Uh-huh. Where does that fall on the Spindrift LaCroix sliding scale?
Okay, here's the thing. Spindrift doesn't belong in the same category because that has actual juice in it. So it's not a seltzer. It's not like a sparkling water. It's its own... It's juice. You know what I mean? So... But... It really...
Hold on. In Spindrift's defense, and they're not a sponsor, but if you want to be, I will defend you. They at least are like, look, all you other LaCroix-type drinks, you're like basically putting a perfume, like a mist of an essence of a fruit or whatever. We're saying, rather than that, we'll just squeeze a little bit of juice. We'll give you like 4 calories as opposed to zero, so that you actually get the actual essence rather than a false essence.
Yeah, but I don't want to drink sugar.
Okay.
That's the thing, is I'm like, if I'm going to ingest sugar, it should be ice cream. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to waste my sugar ingestion on a drink juice when I can trick myself into thinking I'm getting sugar by drinking Waterloo. I do think Waterloo's pretty high up, but it really depends on the flavor. Waterloo and bubbly are my preferences, but...
What's bubbly? I don't even know what bubbly
is. It's just a different brand that also has some fun flavors. They've got like a blackberry, which I like. But Waterloo strawberry, I think, is probably the best strawberry.
I'm actually realizing something right now. Was it you who had the sign at the yes. Writers Grill strike yesterday that said, honk if you like LaCroix?
Yeah.
And look, yet...
I would have said Waterloo, but it would have been confusing.
Yes, because they'd be like, oh, the...
Yeah, LaCroix is like the stand-in for, you know, lightly flavored seltzer water.
Right. You don't want people to see the Waterloo sign and be like, yeah, I like the battle where Napoleon lost.
Exactly, yeah,
I'll honk for that.
Napoleon got what was coming to him.
Weird that she has a sign for that, but yeah, I agree that the rain needed to end.
Yeah.
It is a strange name for... Why is it called Waterloo?
Just because it has water in it, I really think that's the only thing where they're like, it's water-ish. I really think it's as simple as that.
I think it's an awful name because water, all right, if we're going to break it down like it's water, then the other side is loo,
which is toilet.
Bathroom and toilet in England, in British, in English.
It's a really bad name.
It's a horrible name. Is this like the is this what Trader Joe's carries, or does Trader Joe's have their own little?
Oh, Trader Joe's probably has like a Joseph's tonic or some shit. I don't know.
Oh my God. Speaking of Joseph's tonic, you have something in your door here, which definitely looks like an old timey. You got this at an apothecary.
Oh,
it's like a glass jar with a cork that looks like it was, the cork looks like it was hand carved out of a cork tree.
That's a bottle of homemade chili crisp that my brother made.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of time on his hands.
He's an incredibly talented chef and gardener. So it's like made with peppers that I grew. I gave him a bunch of the peppers. I think he made that with some peppers that I grew that I gave to him. But
wow.
Because I
does
grew.
Does he sell them?
No, he doesn't. He just makes it for himself. I mean, it's like he's really into figuring out, like, he's really good at making pickles too. And he does that with stuff he's grown.
So he watched The Last of Us and he was like, I need to prepare.
he's been way ahead of The Last of Us.
Wait, so you were saying before you grow a ton of pickles? I'm sorry, not pickles. You grow pickles. You got that pickle tree? No, you grow a bunch of peppers?
Yeah, well, I took last year off from gardening because we were doing some construction at our house. But the year before that, like, my husband really likes spicy food. Part of the reason why we were excited to go to Thailand. And yeah. I was like, the thing about peppers is they are, as a vegetable, really easy to sort of like breed into new varieties. So there are just sort of infinite varieties of peppers that you will never taste because they're not popular enough to sell in grocery stores, but you can grow them yourself pretty easily. And so I took it upon myself to grow a bunch of really interesting spicy peppers year before last, just to try them. And I mean, some of them are like chemical weapons. They're like, you can't even handle them without gloves and goggles on. And some of them are a bit more reasonable, but they're all pretty spicy. But I had so many. They were so prolific that it got to a point where it was like, we have to figure out how to preserve them. And so I got a dehydrator. I dehydrated a bunch that way and put them in like spice grinders. And then I also just like dried some on a string on the wall, like you see at like a restaurant in New Mexico. And I gave some to my brother to like preserve as he wished.
Wow, that's a pretty fun fact about Emily. Like, I feel like if you were doing an icebreaker at a new job and they're like, tell us something about you that no one would guess, and you'd be like, I am the pepper whisperer. I would have
My favorite, I just want to like give a shout out to my favorite pepper that I grew that year, which was the Peruvian white habanero. It's these very small, like yellowish, whitish peppers that are so spicy, but also kind of like floral and fruity. But then they have like a smoky finish to them too. And they're really spicy, really potent. I really love them. And I'd say of all of the like dried peppers, it's the one that I add to my food the most.
Wow.
Yeah.
Peruvian white habanero. Never heard of it. Is it actually white?
They come out white and then they slowly turn more yellow as they get like a bit riper.
And do they taste like, how do they compare it to like a regular habanero?
They taste pretty similar to a regular habanero. They've just got like a little bit more complexity, I'd say.
That's so interesting. One of my friends had a dinner party and like this chef he had habaneros that had the heat bred out of them.
Oh, I'm growing some of those this year. Habanadas.
Habanadas.
I'm so excited about these. So yeah.
Can I tell you something? They blew my fucking mind.
Oh my God. I've never talked to someone who's eaten them before. What did they taste like?
First of all, you're welcome. Second of all, there is a very weird mental thing that happens because it definitely tastes like a habanero.
And you're expecting the heat?
You're expecting the heat. You get real nervous. Like, I've never gotten so nervous eating a food. Like, it feels like Russian roulette.
Yeah.
It really feels like kind of
like when you eat shishitos and you're waiting for the spicy one, yeah.
I was going to say, you get that with shishitos, but even the spicy one is kind of fun with shishitos.
Yeah.
And if you put a whole habanero in your mouth, it that would be...
You're in hell.
Rest in peace.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's really trippy, but you definitely get the flavor. Like, I feel like they're good to eat for people who are like, peppers have no flavor. They're just hot. Like, it definitely, you put it in your mouth and you're like, this is 100% a habanero.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the heat. It's
That's
wild.
What I've read, that it's like, and then it just sort of like, you relax into like the nuances of the flavor. So the story behind habanadas is that, yeah, someone discovered a genetic anomaly where like there was just like a genetic mutation in these habaneros they were growing where they came out with not only no heat, but actually no flavor. They were like a zero on the Scoville scale, but they had no flavor. And over 15 generations, they crossbred those ones with regular habaneros until all of the heat was gone, but all of the flavor remained.
Wow.
It took 15 generations, and then...
I was going to say, what a waste of genetic knowledge passed down. We could have cured cancer with this knowledge, but instead we bred a pepperless pepper.
You can't. It's not that much genetic knowledge. Like, it just appeared out of nowhere. Like, right. It was just a totally random genetic mutation. And it really is not that complicated to just like breed peppers together. All you're doing is just like putting the flowers next to each other.
Yeah. Just hoping they have chemistry.
But I'm really hoping that my seedlings survive and I can taste them this year. I'm like, that's the thing I'm growing this year that I'm the most excited about.
That is so cool. I'm actually very excited for you. And I would love to be able to buy them. I don't know that I have it in me to grow them. I also don't have enough sun where I live for them. Peppers need a lot of sun.
Yeah. Don't you live in LA? No.
I do, but like my house like is like covered in ivy and doesn't have like a lot of like constant sun throughout the day.
Oh, even outside?
Yeah, it's a very shaded little oasis.
Yeah, you'd have to get like grow lights and do it inside.
Yeah, no, I have ferns. I got a lot of ferns.
Yeah, that's good for shade.
Yeah, I got a lot of ferns. The non-hot habanero, called very cheekily the habanada, has an interesting backstory. The man behind the habanada is a Cornell University plant breeder named Michael Mazurek, who created it as a part of his doctoral research. He got the idea after discovering a rogue heatless pepper whose genetics behaved very differently from a naturally sweet pepper like bell peppers. This pepper had somehow lost whatever made it spicy in the first place, so Mazurek wondered, what would happen if they created a habanero without the heat? After a couple of generations of cross-pollinating, or as I like to call it, steamy hot veg-on-veg action, he started to get some non-hot but aromatic peppers. In 2014, the habanada was one of the plants featured in the Culinary Breeding Network Variety Showcase, an annual event where chefs are paired with a new food variety and left to experiment. Nora Atin, chef of Portland, Oregon's Le Pigeon restaurant, awesome place by the way, she got the habanada, which she turned into a summer sherbet. It was a hit, and the habanada now is the most popular non-peppery pepper around. All right, I'm going to get to the questions that I ask everyone on the podcast.
All right.
Curious to see what your answers are, starting with, what is your earliest food memory?
It's hard to say because of how memory works, because I'm like, I think the earliest ones are the ones that turned into stories that we told in the family. My earliest one is, so I grew up in Alameda, California, home of the original Chevy's Tex-Mex, the very first Chevy's restaurant.
I don't even know what Chevy's Tex-Mex is.
You've never been to Chevy's?
No.
Oh my God. They were huge for a few years. They went nationwide. We had one in Times Square, but the first one was in Alameda. And it's like these Tex-Mex restaurants, and they had like a tortilla machine where you could see them making the tortillas. I went there with my family when I was pretty young, and I got a Shirley Temple, and they only put one maraschino cherry in it, and I got really upset, and so they brought me a whole bowl of maraschino cherries, and I ate all of them and got immediate diarrhea.
Yeah. And there's alcohol in. Isn't there alcohol in
there? Oh, no. A Shirley Temple's like a mocktail. It's like.
No, but the maraschino cherries.
Oh, is there?
They're like preserved in a little bit of alcohol.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe that's why I got diarrhea.
Maybe that's why they're no longer in business, because they kept getting all these kids drunk. Wait, is it out of business?
Well, the original one isn't there anymore, but now you're making me look it up.
Yeah, you're doing research for me. Chevy's? Yeah.
No, it's still open. I think they have like fewer locations than they used to.
I'm a big fan of Tex-Mex. I think it's a very fun fusion. It's like Texans being like, all right, Mexicans, you've worked on this cuisine for generations and generations. We're going to take it and put a lot more processed cheese on it. And
I don't think that's the origin of Tex-Mex, because I think it really is just that it's like, it's less that Texans were like, I'm going to take Mexican food, and more that it's like Texas decided Mexico was part of Texas. They decided like, hey, this land. And so there's a lot of Mexican people still in Texas.
Yes, yeah. There are.
Yeah.
I think what, well, okay, it's a little bit half and half. So basically, yes, there were a lot of Mexicans in Texas, but product-wise, Texas was, you could get a lot more kind of, you know, the American diet kind of seeped into it.
Right,
and,
yeah.
And the processed cheese, like.
It's definitely made for American palates, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not saying that in a bad way, but that was kind of what was available. And then it got interacted in, and because it's a pretty modern, Tex-Mex is not like a super old thing. It's like early 1900s.
Okay, so here's where Chevy still has locations. Sacramento, Fairfield, Roseville, Santa Rosa, South San Francisco, Vallejo. So this is all California, Northern California so far. Arlington.
Virginia?
I think so. Greenbelt, Elk Grove, Union City, Emeryville, Bloomington, Sioux Falls, Clifton, Linden, Annapolis, Arundel Mills, Miami, O'Fallon, Olivet, Orlando Millenia, and Tessin Ferry. I don't know where that is. But
that was like a list of cities that I never, ever want to go to. That was literally nailed every single place that I don't want to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fair point.
If I find myself in
Sioux
Falls.
Uh-huh. Go to the Chevy's.
I will be sure to go to Chevy's. Okay, what is your death row meal? So let's see. What's a good reason for you to go to death row? Let's say you spend all this time growing these habaneros. You eat when you're so excited, and it's actually very spicy. You take one. You go back to the gardener who sold you the seeds and you shove it in his face. Little did you know, he ironically is allergic to peppers, even though he sells pepper seeds.
Right.
And goes into anaphylactic shock. He's dead. You're on death row. What is your death row meal?
So I have been a vegetarian for like 20 years, but not because I didn't like meat. I really liked meat. And so I think my death row meal is probably just going to be like all the meat that I miss.
Mm.
You know, like
kielbasa,
fried chicken, pork loin, like probably a lot of pork. You know, I think it's going to be a real meat heavy meal.
You know, it's funny that you didn't mention steak because...
Oh, steak. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I was going to say the number one requested death row meal on the show is steak.
Is steak.
But I kind of love that you mentioned a bunch of interesting other meats than steak. steak is the easy answer. But kielbasa?
Kielbasa was one of my favorites. And it's one of those things, like, the thing is, like, fried chicken... We've got pretty good vegan fried chicken. Like, we've sort of figured that out. It's not...
I'm rolling my eyes, everyone. My eyes are rolling out of its skull.
The last 5 years have seen incredible innovation. As someone who's been eating fake meat for 20 years, we didn't used to have it figured out. We kind of have it figured out now. But we haven't figured out steak. We haven't figured out kielbasa. Like... There's just something that's like a little bit more sort of like irony, you know, about the red meat.
Yeah. Have you? So, I'm kind of the fake meat stuff is interesting to me because I'm always like, I think I would have much rather just have eaten vegetarian or like something that is a meaty like tempeh. I like tempeh in that world.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you like the Impossible meat, or would you rather, if you're going to have a burger, would you rather have an Impossible burger or a black bean burger?
I prefer Beyond, or like a fake chicken one. I prefer to like a
What's
black
the fake
bean.
Chicken one made out of? Is it?
Some of them are made like vegetarian, not vegan. So they've mm-hmm. got some like egg white in there that sort of helps with some of the texture. But a lot of them are, I mean, they're mostly soy. And the thing is, like, real chicken, sometimes you get those weird little like stringy fat things that kind of gross you out. None of that in the vegan one. But I mean, burgers themselves are like, I wasn't crazy about burgers when I ate meat. Right. That wasn't one of the things where I was like, ooh, a burger. But I usually go for Beyond Burgers versus like, yeah. But I will say, like, it's just such a crapshoot whether people are good at making like veggie burgers. Like, there's yeah. some places in LA that make really good ones. Castle's Hamburgers makes like one of the best like homemade. Like, I will definitely go for their house-made veggie burger over like a Beyond Burger. But it really depends on the restaurant.
Is that the place in Koreatown?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. That place is supposed to be fantastic. I've never been, but it's on my list. All right. What's the best high-end meal you've ever had?
Probably Providence in LA.
Ooh.
Yeah. Been there a couple times, and it's always been really good.
Somebody's got some residuals.
It's not the residuals, baby. It's just like the straight up paychecks. That's the issue. That's why we're striking. Is I can't go to Providence now.
Right.
No, yeah. It was like, you know, I think it was like for our anniversary or something we went, or for my husband's birthday we went, and it was just like really good. I do I'm not someone who spends like a lot of money on like nice clothes, like, or anything like that. But I do really like spending my money on like nice meals out, or like when we're traveling, finding like what's the nicest restaurant here that I can go to, you know, just because
they have a Chevy's. Is there a Chevy's?
Yes, exactly.
Well, you're in good company. I mean, I feel like me and all my listeners are on the same exact page.
I will say, okay, wait, actually, can I change my answer to this?
Of course.
The actual probably like most mind-blowing like fine dining experience I've ever had was there was a very brief period of time when I was an actor on a multicam sitcom on TBS, and we shot an episode in Vegas, and we went out with like me and a couple staffers and then one of the stars of the show who had been an actor for a long time and was pretty rich, and one of our like EPs who was also very rich. We went to Nobu in Vegas at Caesar's Palace, and they know Nobu, like they know the guy, they know the people there, and so
they know Frank Nobu. Nobu's there.
No, I do think that it's like an eponymous restaurant. I do think that's his first or last name, but
it's like Nobu Matsuhisa or something.
Yeah, something like that. And they just were making like, it was one of those situations where like, when you're like, oh, we have a vegetarian at the table, and the chef's like, I'll make something special, that's when you're about to get some really good fucking food. And it was so good, but also so stressful, because it was not clear at the beginning of the meal whether they were treating or we were splitting it. And I did not have the money to split it. And neither did multiple other people at the table. So we were both like really enjoying some of the best food we've ever had, and also like panicking until at the end it was very clear that they were like paying for the whole meal. And it was probably, you know, like $4,000 or something outrageous. But I think made it a better meal at the end, because we were just like staring at each other like the poor people at the table, like, oh God, what are we gonna do?
There's something so singular that is hard to describe when you're on a TV show that is like just starting out, and everyone's got that excitement, and there's famous people on it who are way more famous than you, and you have to like kind of pretend like you're suddenly buds.
Yeah, and, like, or that you understand anything about their life in any real way.
I did this show, and it's called The Crew on Netflix, and Kevin James was like the star of it.
Oh my God.
And so like suddenly we're going to a steakhouse and I'm sitting next to Kevin James and I don't know how to relate to him. And suddenly it's like, hey, bud. And then the show gets canceled and you're like, and he's like, I'm never talking to any of you ever again. It's like, but we went to your home. You brought us.
Nope, that's not nope. real.
It's over. That to me is the most, I'm trying to think what the word is, but like it's the most cruel thing about Hollywood is like, a lot of people think the cruel thing about Hollywood is people who like dream about making it and will never make it. I think the more crueler thing is when you kind of make it.
And you get like a whiff. You're like standing outside a restaurant where they're like cooking something really nice. And you're like, but and you're like, oh, no, I'm not actually getting in and getting a table tonight. I'm like Lady and the Tramping at the back door and getting like a little plate of spaghetti that probably fell on the floor before they put
right.
it out.
Right. Like, okay, I guess I'll... unlike all those Redfin homes that I just spent the past 3 months liking. What's the best low-end meal that you've ever had?
Oh, man. Hate to bring it back to Thailand, but the food in Thailand is so good. And if you go to the – and the food at the malls is particularly so good. And one of the best meals I've ever had was like a – it cost like a dollar at one of the malls there. And it was just like – just the best like Pad Khe Mao I'll ever have in my entire life.
What is Pad Khe Mao, by the way?
It's one of the like rice noodle dishes. It's like a stir-fried rice noodles with like peppers and, you know.
Fun. I think anyone on this show who's been to Thailand will always choose something from Thailand for their best low-end meal.
Yeah.
It's like here's a 5-course meal, 35 cents.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, I almost picked for my high-end meal one that we got there that was like $45, which tells you it was like really fucking fancy, like
right.
Where it was like a molecular gastronomy, but for all Thai food. So we got like a Thai red curry that was like frozen. So it was like a slushy, which was like weirdly worked because like the kind of creaminess of the like coconut milk curry made it like make sense as kind of like sort of like a frappuccino, but like savory and like, it was so fucking good. Anyway.
How fun.
Yeah.
Are you a drinker? I don't know if you're a drinker or not.
I don't drink anymore, but I also used to do stand-up comedy. So at a certain point I did drink.
What was your favorite drunk food when you were a degenerate stand-up comedian?
I think the thing that I loved when I was like doing stand up in New York and like getting drunk and just like getting home that way is just like falafel. Like New York falafel, so cheap, so good, so everywhere. Oh, yeah. Like that. Or
was it the Mamoons? The Mamoons falafel?
Yeah, Mamoons is so good. Or just like any of the anywhere you're passing it. You know what I mean? Like, whatever one I was passing or, like, you know, dollar slices. But I think that, like, if I was, like, going to a diner drunk, it would be mozzarella sticks.
That's good. I'm actually, you and I are in agreement. The halal truck in New York City, when you're drunk and walking by it, it's like, yeah, it has a, there is a, what's it called? It's like a gravitational force pulling you in. That you can't resist.
And you know what? Part of me, too, is, like, always thinking about that Simpsons episode where they open up the falafel franchise.
I don't think I saw it.
Where Marge is in the investing club and, like, she opens up the pretzel business and everyone else in the investing club opens up like a falafel business. And they make it look – it's one of those like TV foods that like when it's a cartoon looks really good. And I always sort of think about that when I was eating like really good like street falafel in New York.
That is so funny. Did we cross paths in New York stand-up wise?
Who knows? I was so drunk. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know if we did. I was only there for a couple years. I was there like 2011 to 2013.
Oh, that's like right when I left to come to LA.
Okay, yeah. I came to LA in like 2013.
Two ships in the night.
Yep.
Two ships. I'm not going to ask you your favorite hangover cure because you're not a drinker anymore.
I'm not a drinker anymore. At the time, it was pancakes.
Pancakes?
Yeah.
Wow, that was on the tip of your tongue. That
just
was like a
real
thing.
Basic, like, you know, just
buttermilk.
Just bread. It's just bread.
Yeah, it's just bread.
Yeah.
Who is your favorite celebrity food personality?
It has to be, just for pure nostalgia reasons, Martin Yan. Who is Bay Area local. Like, he had a PBS cooking show in the Bay Area called Yan Can Cook.
Yan Can Cook was amazing.
Yes. So good. He just has, like, he's so fun to watch. He's just got such a great attitude. And I, like, used one of his recipes recently. Like, I watched an old video and it just made me so happy to watch it again. It is very, like, you know, Ratatouille. Like, if I can make it, you can make it. Like, yeah. That's his whole thing. He's, like, tries to make, recipes accessible, but also, like, really good, authentic Chinese food.
It's funny you say this. I literally happened to watch an episode yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm starting a YouTube show called The Vintage Roast, and it's, like, watching those vintage cooking shows and, like, kind of having fun and roasting
them.
Oh,
wow.
But his is, like, so fun because he's so talented as a chef. Like, yeah. I've been watching a lot of these, and a lot of them are not good chefs, like the old school ones. But they're just, like, they've got these fun, like, 70s personalities, you know?
Yeah.
And people love that. But his skills are nuts. Like,
oh my
you
God,
can tell this guy
his
like,
knife
spent
skills,
time in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watching his knife skills, you're just like, okay, well, I'm not going to do that part of it.
And I love the Chinese flex of having like a butcher knife be your everything knife. Like,
yeah.
He was just cutting little chiffonading chives with his big
with
butcher
just
knife.
Just the giant, the biggest knife you've ever seen. Yeah.
So cool. No, I love him. His personality is infectious too. He's just like, also his accent is very fun and like almost like he kind of revels in it. I don't know. I love that show. He's fantastic.
He's like, I mean, it's also like growing up in the Bay Area, I think I took for granted how long our history of like Chinese culture is there. Like,
oh yeah.
Chinese food in San Francisco has been there since, you know, the 1800s.
Yeah.
Like since the founding of the city. It's like so integral to it. And so like you have to be fucking good to be like the Chinese food chef on TV in the Bay Area. Like,
oh, yeah.
You have to be legit. I actually saw him recently on, I started watching that show Bling Empire. Have you watched that?
No.
It's like, you know, they basically, it's like a reality show on Netflix about like obscenely wealthy Asian American people, and it was sort of like the answer to Crazy Rich Asians. Like,
okay,
they were
it.
Like, well, this is the who the real people are, and it's not a good reality show. But there's one episode where they take a private jet up to San Francisco to have a private cooking lesson with Martin Yan.
That's
and I was
fun,
like, oh my god, I forgot about him.
You're like, I'm back in.
I'm back in.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I love that you said that because I don't think anyone's ever said that.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Over 150 episodes.
Who's
the
most
show, no
popular, like?
Anthony Bourdain, to the point where I almost want to say, who's your favorite food personality besides Anthony
Bourdain? Besides Anthony Bourdain, yeah.
Because everyone says it and they say it with such gravitas, like it's the first time anyone said
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like they're like.
They're like, hey. It's got to be the goat.
It's like,
Dad.
Oh, let me guess. You also like, love Richard Pryor.
desert island food. So you're trapped on a desert island. One food you're going to eat for the rest of your life. You will never tire of it.
This is so hard because it is like, I want to say something that doesn't have nutritional value. You know what
That's
I mean?
Fine.
Like,
you don't have to take it literal. It's not about surviving the island. This is not an episode of Alone.
Yeah.
Just what do you want to eat?
It's probably just like pizza with mushrooms, just like a really good thin crust pizza with mushrooms. That's got
to be like the thin crust pizza.
New York style, thin crust, like,
yeah,
truly the like the $1 slice. Like,
you like it with like the shitty mushrooms, like the canned mushrooms?
Oh,
or
yeah,
you want, like,
baby.
Fresh? Oh, yeah.
The canned mushrooms.
You're filthy. You're disgusting.
They hold up better. Because of just like the way water behaves with mushrooms, the canned ones are already like they've sort of already figured out what their like moisture level is going to be. Whereas like sometimes when you use fresh mushrooms on pizza, it's sort of like they dry out on the top and then stay wet in the middle. And it's kind of like weird to bite into.
I get that. I will give the counterpoint that the canned mushrooms are so kind of dense in water that when it cooks, the water starts to cook out of it a little bit, and you get a little bit of a soggier pizza.
That's just if they haven't been sliced thinly enough, or you don't have enough cheese.
We should start this food version of Crossfire.
Yeah, I'm being very combative right now.
I yield the rest of my time. Okay. What food can't you stand eating?
Oh, I'm like really not good with like the taste of the ocean. Like seafood, I'm not crazy about. Like it has to be. I don't eat seafood, but occasionally I'll eat something where I'm like, I'm a vegetarian, but like I get that a scallop doesn't have a brain. So I'm not like, I know I don't have like a problem. It's basically a vegetable, even though it's technically an animal.
I just eat dumb animals. I eat the dumbest.
No, it literally does not have a brain. So I'm like, that's, you know, it's not experiencing like fear or isolation or anything like that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine with eating that. They're plentiful, whatever. But it's just like, it has to be so mild. If there's any, and seaweed, I can't eat it plain. I'm like, ugh. Like, I can handle seaweed in sushi just because there's other stuff to focus on. And I realize it's integral to the experience. But, like, I can't eat, like, plain seaweed or just, like, fish in general. I'm just, like, I can't do it.
Right now, the chef at Providence, seafood-centric restaurant that you named your favorite high-end restaurant, is fucking yelling in his car. As he's listening to this.
There wasn't fish in anything I ate there.
Last question. This is my favorite question. As you take a sip of your Waterloo, reminding us of Napoleon's final days, what are your restaurant pet peeves?
So I'm going to be, again, vegetarian specific. My issue is when there's like one vegetarian option and it's the same thing at like at a bunch of different restaurants, which is just like a sandwich with roasted red peppers in it. Mm. I don't like roasted red peppers. I don't think they belong in a sandwich. And I don't think that sandwich should have that as a load-bearing ingredient.
Mm.
And that is very often the case. It's like either roasted red peppers or like, I'm also like, I love mushrooms. They're maybe my favorite food, but portobello mushrooms are overused just because they're big.
Yeah.
And most people do not know how to prepare them in a way that actually allows them to like serve a central role in a dish. And so just like a portobello mushroom red pepper, like roasted red pepper sandwich is so often the only thing on the menu for me. And I consider it a slap in the face. It's two foods that like, I'm just like, the roasted red peppers are slimy and sweet. It does not stand in for like anything that should be on it. Like, why is that on the sandwich? And then you pair it with like badly prepared, super wet, basically a water balloon of a portobello mushroom. And I'm just like, you hate me. You really, really hate me. You haven't thought about, did anyone at the restaurant eat this sandwich? It makes me furious.
I am so thrilled right now because I didn't even know in the beginning, you know, as a non-vegetarian, you never even think about this. You took me on the journey. I'm with you.
Yeah.
And I will pick it with you outside. It's so good. Oh my God. I'm with you 1,000,000%. What an awful... I think roasted red peppers are probably one of the most overrated foods. And I think the reason it's on every menu is because the words roasted red pepper look kind of fun on a menu.
Yeah.
Like it looks nice written out. It's like it evokes something kind of fancy. Something.
Yeah. And you know what? They look kind of cool when they're charred and like.
Yeah.
They do have like a decent amount of flavor. But the texture is all wrong and it just doesn't fit where they're trying to make it fit. And I also, I think it's like, I really like raw red pepper. And obviously, like, you can't question my pepper bona fides. Like, I am obviously a pepper person in general.
Full circle, baby.
But like the basic bell pepper that you get at like a grocery store is such a boring food.
Yeah.
And
I'm with you.
it feels like it's taken all of the like complexity out of this like really interesting fruit. Like,
you're absolutely right. I never even thought about that. It's kind of like, it's like the reality TV show of peppers. It's like just dumb filler taking away from all the talented peppers.
It's the millennial gray of peppers, if we're being honest. If we're like really trying to get at it, it's like the thing that you remove any of the nuance in order to make it like so widely acceptable. And again, this is one of those things where it's like when you start growing your own peppers or tomatoes, it makes eating the store-bought ones so much harder because you're like,
yeah,
they ruined it so that they could like put them in a truck and move them across the country. Like,
yeah,
that's what they did, and it's such a bummer, but luckily I'm not gonna eat it if I don't have to.
Emily, you know, it's always a crapshoot when I when I talk to a guest who I don't know, because a lot of my friends come on this. And this was one of the more pleasantly surprised meeting for the first time and talking food for the first time. We are kindred spirits,
oh my
even
gosh.
Though you're a vegetarian and I'm a carnivore. Thank you for doing the podcast. This is amazing.
Thank you for
funny.
Having me. I can't believe I got to meet someone who's eaten a habanada. I'm genuinely so thrilled, and I'm so happy that the experience was not overhyped. Like, your experience of it was exactly what I read. Like, I was just reading articles about this fucking pepper.
Guys, this is why we need to come to an agreement, because the writers have nothing else to do except for reading articles about fucking peppers, neutered peppers. Oh, I love it.
Oh, boy.
Emily, tell everyone where they can find you.
I'm on most social media at Mr. Emily Heller, MR Emily Heller. And you can also find me on the picket lines. I'm in the WGA. I'm striking right now. Come out and support us. If you're an actor, please come to the picket lines. You'll get a lot of attention, which I know you want. And we will remember who came when we are casting our next projects.
Ooh,
trying to spread the word.
A little veiled threat with that inviting note.
A threat or an offer. You know what I mean? I'm incentivizing.
I didn't even think about that. It's very smart for actors to go to the picket line.
This
right
is
now.
What I'm saying. I saw Patrick Fabian from Better Call Saul yesterday, and I was like, points. Okay. Solidarity. I love him. He gets it.
I love it. Well, as a member of both guilds, I will say I would be out there, except that I have a broken leg right now.
Oh, no.
Although I can walk on, I can sort of start walking on my boot, and I have the perfect sign, which will say, actors can't break a leg without writers.
Oh, very good.
Come on.
Very good.
All right. Well, thank you, Emily.
Thanks for having me.